Are you tired of spending your time and money chasing strategy after strategy, only to discover what worked 10, 5, or even 2 years ago is not working now? Things shift fast in the online space, and if you're not keeping up, you're getting left behind. It's time for something different. Welcome to the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast, where every single episode will be jam-packed with proven, profitable strategies, behind-the-scenes secrets, and what's working now resources from industry experts and global influencers to help you scale your business, shorten your learning curve, and stand out in a crowded, noisy marketplace. And now, your host, award-winning marketing and media strategist and international speaker, Patty Farmer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast. I'm your host, Patty Farmer, and I'm looking forward to sharing today's industry expert with you and really the topic that we're going to talk about today. Today, we're talking about imposter syndrome. It's the single biggest roadblock to your progress, yet we hardly ever discuss it. Why? Most people are unaware they even have it or the impact of its presence in our personal and professional lives. So today on the show, we have an imposter syndrome expert. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Get your pen and paper ready. You're going to want to take notes. So as a speaker, imposter syndrome expert, comedian, author, and international executive coach, Jen Kocan is on a global mission to empower C-suite level women and their teams to have the audacity to be themselves and to lead without limits. So that sounds pretty good to me, and I'm sure it does to you too. Jen, thank you so much for being here with me today.
I'm so excited to be here with you, Patty.
Thank you. And I have to tell you, I was really excited to have you on the show because, you know, when you're talking about imposter syndrome, nobody wants to talk about it, right? I mean, it's a topic nobody wants to talk about. And I think a lot of it is because they don't really know what it means. It's kind of like a buzz phrase that's happening in the marketplace right now. And so people are like, ooh, you know, and it sounds bad. Who wants to have imposter syndrome, right? It really does. But I think that it's not that somebody who had that is necessarily doing something that isn't right. I think they're just not aware of it, just like what we were talking about earlier. So let's kind of start it a little bit by what is your definition of imposter syndrome as the expert?
That's a really good question. And I will say it's really not a syndrome because that's a medical diagnosis. It's really known as imposter phenomenon. But guess what? The SEO ranking is like skyrocketing. Like you said, it's such a buzzword. People use syndrome. And I think too, people don't talk about it because as you said, they don't identify with it. So here's the bottom line. It was created or discovered by two researchers back in the 70s. And what they say is it's someone who's a super high achiever who questions and doubts themselves, who wonders how they got there, who doesn't feel like they should really be at the table, have a seat at the table. About 30 years after Dr. Valerie Young had been studying that, and what we found is that originally this experience of doubting or questioning yourself was supposedly just among women because men have more testosterone, which is known as the confidence hormone. However, about 70% of the population has imposter syndrome. And what I say is, if you don't have it in some level, some way, you're not playing a big enough game. Because this phenomenon of being feeling like an imposter, the way I look at it is, everybody has it. And it's something happened to us when we were a little kid, between 6 and 12 is what I found with my clients. We had some innocuous experience of being embarrassed. Somebody got a C on a report card, was yelled at by their father and felt embarrassment because she thought average was okay. No, give me 1500 words on average. She doesn't want to feel that embarrassment and disappointing her father again. Okay, I'm going to get everything right. I'm just going to make sure everything's perfect and I'll never have to worry about feeling embarrassed again. But it wasn't her that figured, it was just her brain. I'll even say it this way, the brain's job is to keep the thing it's a brain of alive, which is you. So it's constantly predicting threat. However, the brain can't determine between a real threat or an imaginary threat. So the moment you have any unwanted emotion where there's an increase in your blood pressure, an increase in heart palpitations, embarrassment, shame, guilt, disappointment, the brain's like, wait, we have to protect. How do we protect? What's that strategy? Boom, perfectionist, get everything right. Boom, don't ask for help because somebody told you, oh, there you go again, offering to buy us ice cream. This actually happened to a client of mine who was a CFO, and she was terrible at managing her team. And what we realized is 12 years old, went to the store to buy ice cream with some friends, and she offered to buy the ice cream. And one of the girls said, there you go again, being helpful. I'm never going to help anybody. I'm going to do it myself. So when I look at imposter syndrome, it's not something to overcome, as most people talk about. It is something to embrace. It is something to make your superpower and something to recognize when you're playing on the skinny branches, when you're risking, when you're going out there with that new marketing strategy, when you're launching that new program, when you're speaking to that bigger group. Of course, the brain's going to go, oh, wait, protect. And that's the way that I look at it.
I think that is so true too, though, because the reality is, it's like what they say all the time, if you're not thinking big enough, if what your next thing that you want to do doesn't scare you, then you're not thinking big enough. I remember about 11 years ago when I decided to be a professional speaker, I was really scared to do it. And I was scared for all the wrong reasons. And one of the biggest reasons for me was I didn't feel like I was, quote unquote, eloquent enough, and that I didn't like wearing soap opera dresses, like I call them, right? And that just wasn't me, and that I was always trying to be that. And then I hired a coach, a speaker coach, and she said to me, Patty, it isn't about changing you. It's really speaking in front of audiences who want to hear it the way you say it. And that was a game changer for me, because I have to tell you, before that, and it was a brief time before I just realized I did need to hire someone, I kept thinking that every time I spoke, and I'd speak about marketing and media, and I'm an authority on it, and I know my stuff, right? But I kept waiting, because a lot of people have different opinions, right? And I kept thinking that somebody was going to stand up and call bullshit. Like, I kept waiting, thinking that one of these days, somebody's going to stand up and like, what am I going to do, right? And all of a sudden, I realized that even if that should happen, because somebody was rude enough to do that, right? The bottom line is, you're not trying to reinvent ice cream. You just have your own flavor. And there are going to be people who still like chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry. And there are going to be people who love Rocky Road and butter pecan. You just need to decide what your flavor is. And once I got that, it was a game changer for me. Although I have to say that every new thing that I start to do when I think big, I mean, my goodness, when I decided that, you know, my daughter and I were going to work on opening a hotel on the Las Vegas Strip, or when I decided to do this event in New York City or in Italy, like, those things were scary for me, right? And I think that for me, it was just accepting that it's okay if I fail, because failure is just part of success. It's just one of the steps. And once I got that, it really made things easier for me. Not to say I still don't feel the feelings at the time, right? But one of the things that you shared that I really love, and I really feel like this would really help the audience, is that you said that there's 5 types of imposter syndrome, and really knowing how to identify how it manifests in a leader's life and business is super important. So what are those 5 types?
Yes. And before I get into that, let me say one thing, which is, you are not alone in those feelings. I have a Google alert on imposter syndrome. J-Lo, every time she goes to record a new album, thinks, oh my God, what if people figure out I'm a failure? Maya Angelou, when she was writing her 12th book, thought someone was going to knock at the door and take her out. This is my favorite. Albert Einstein was, he said, I feel like people will think of me as an involuntary swindler. E equals MC squared much? Or even Margaret Cho, who used to head up the World Health Organization, didn't like being called an expert. I don't know about you, but I would like to have an expert heading up the World Health Organization. And I'm giving you all those, right? So I'm giving those examples because there are 5 archetypes that I pulled from Dr. Young's book, because I feel like some people, I don't have imposter syndrome, but once they hear these, and I'll say them in just a minute, I'm setting people up, get your pen and paper out, write these down. You're going to think to yourself, oh my God, that is me. So the first one is the perfectionist. These are people that have got to get it right 100% of the time. And if they miss that insanely high mark, they ruminate about it 4 days. Now, they don't only expect perfectionism from themselves, they expect it from everybody else as well. So you can imagine it is really tough to work for them and make sure that you're doing a good job for them. And if you are a perfectionist, likely you're a bit of a micromanager and you don't like to delegate because you think you can get it done better than anyone else. So that's the, and as I'm saying these too, it's not as if everybody fits into one of these archetypes. You're going to hear bits and pieces in all of them, and that's perfectly normal. The second archetype is the expert, the person who has a ton of letters after their name, has to know more, doesn't feel like they can go live with their interview on the media because they don't know enough yet. You know, or as you were speaking about, you up there speaking, well, wait, what if somebody stands up and calls BS on me, except you know your topic for your marketplace, for your niche, right? And the best thing we can do is niche as small as possible. I'm a big Rocky Road fan. That is my favorite ice cream. And I loved that you mentioned that. So talk to the Rocky Road eaters, or the Rocky Road eaters will find you, right? So it's that expert. So you hold yourself back because you think you have to know the most out of everybody. I had a client who's a lawyer in a very niche market, and she's asked to speak on intellectual property all the time. And she freaks out, her palms get sweaty, her heart races, because again, those body sensations are real. When you're going after those big projects, Italy, New York, hotel, et cetera, of course, you're going to have these moments of, oh my gosh, can I do this? Of course, that is normal. If you didn't have that, I'd be worried about you. I'd wonder if you were some kind of psychotic person if you didn't worry about it. So we have perfectionist, we have expert, natural genius. This is one that I identified with because things came easy to me. Like things just came easy to me. But here's the rub about that I see for myself and that other people have also said to me. Let's say you and I want to collaborate on a project. And I'm working with you, but I don't see my way clear to how to get from point A, you know, from the beginning to the end. I won't do it. If I don't think I'm going to be good at something, or I do it one time and it's not easy, I will quit. This is what's happened to me in the past. Or if I start thinking about, let's say, your retreat center in Italy, and I can't see my way to get from the beginning to the end, bad idea. I probably shouldn't do it, rather than allowing myself to bump up against that not knowing and that wonder. So perfectionist, expert, natural genius, soloist, somebody who's got to do it themselves, thinks asking for help is not beneath them, but it shows weakness that they're asking for help. I should be able to do this on my own. Or it's an, I don't need you. I don't need anyone. I'm not going to rely on anybody because I'm going to have to go back and redo the work. And then the final one is the superwoman or Superman, who feels like they have to work 24/7 to make money. Even on the weekends, they've got to have a to-do list. They've got to constantly be ticking things off their to-do list. And their whole sense of worth is how hard they're working. So perfectionist, expert, natural genius, soloist, and Superman or woman.
And I think that as I was listening to you, like you said, we may find that we see a little bit of ourselves in each of them, or like I feel like it may be, and I felt like it was for me, is it's not so much that as that different projects or different things you do bring out one or more of them at that time for that thing, right? You know, because like I know for me, I did used to be one of those people who, if I didn't see the path from A to Z, like, how was I going to do that? I realized that for me, I was one of those people and I would just put it on the parking lot and I wouldn't do it. But then I had an aha moment about 10 years ago, and which is pretty much how I built my business, and realized that you don't have to do everything yourself. And so for me, I just, whenever that would happen, I would just say, okay, so what exactly are the things that you don't feel are your thing. So for example, for me, the biggest one was that I don't feel like I write copy very good, right? I just don't feel like I'm a natural copywriter. I'm a speaker, but writing, first of all, my brain just goes faster than I can type. And so I just realized that, oh, the number one thing for me is when I do projects is to collaborate with a copywriter so that I don't have to worry about that part. They work in their brilliance and I work in mine, and that works really, really well. But then the other thing is I tend to challenge myself, and I think a lot of people do, that when I know that I'm not good at something, I feel like I'm not good at something, then I tend to want to push myself. For example, going back to that same thing about writing, I gave myself grace and said, you know what, Patty, if you don't love it so much, then don't blog. Nobody says you have to blog, right? So I gave myself grace not to. Instead, I now publish a magazine because now I only have to do it once a quarter instead of once a week, right? And that I actually can do, right? It works for me. So I really feel like, you know, the days of people telling you, and I think maybe this fostered some of that, was that when people told you that when you were in business, oh, like you have to do video, you have to blog, you know, you have to have this amazing website, you have to be a speaker, you have like all the have tos to be successful. And the reality is that is so not true. I mean, I literally was making multiple six figures as a speaker. I didn't even have a speaker one sheet. I didn't have a speaker reel. I didn't have any of those things. But what I had was a network, right? You know, and so the reality really is that if there's one thing out there that you're just like, oh, I'm not good at it, I don't like to do it, don't do it, right? It's kind of like when you go to the gym. If you say, oh, I have a bad back and I can't do that exercise, a good trainer is going to be able to say, oh, well, there's another way to work that muscle without you getting on the floor and doing sit-ups, right? So I think that it is important.
Yeah, there's so much richness in what you said. And I will say a couple of things. One is, one of my favorite books that I recommend to clients is a book, I'm sure you've read it, called The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. It's like 25 years old. He's a wonderful writer, psychologist, but what he talks about is working in your zone of genius. And that's what I hear you saying is, look, my zone of genius is speaking. And that's what I do too. I delegate the stuff that is not my zone of genius, that I'm not passionate about, or people will come to me and ask me to coach them in, let's say, their career, which I could, I'm competent at it. It's just not my zone of genius and I'm not interested. So I'll always refer that business out. The other thing I wanted to speak to is, yes, imposter syndrome in many forms will rear its head when we're in our stretch zone, right? I think of a rubber band. If it's just lying on the table, it's not doing its job. When it's stretched, it's actually fulfilling what it's here to fulfill. Just like us humans, when we are stretching, we're actually doing what we were meant to do. Just don't go so far as to break yourself or that rubber band. What I have found in working with my clients over the last couple of years, and this is how I got to be interested in being an imposter syndrome expert, because there's always what I call an originating incident. So when I first, I've been a coach for 23 years. My first career was in politics and I was coaching for a big company at the same time. And then in 2016, I went into business for myself. And those first 3 years, like you said, I was listening to what everybody else was talking about. You got to do this. You have a high ticket offer. You have to do it this way. And none of it felt right to me at all in any way, shape, or form. Until finally, I worked with an expert. You and I both know her, Megan Conter. And she helped me recognize who I wanted to work with, my target audience, that kind of thing. And I said, okay, I'm going to now stick my neck out and really, like you said, speak to the rocky road of the world and discuss that ice cream. And I'm going to take a chance. And my head was lopped off left and right. I felt so out of my comfort zone. When I wasn't speaking or being on a podcast, I was at home beating myself up, really tearing myself down, until I got a coach who helped me realize this all went back to an originating incident. And here's what happened really quickly. I was six. I was in love with a boy named Keith Burpee. My best friend liked him too. And we decided, as little six-year-olds in Michigan in the winter, what we should do is chase him around the schoolyard, push him in the snow, and see who he wanted to kiss. And whoever he wanted to kiss would be his girlfriend. And Michelle puckered up and he kissed her, and I puckered up and he went, ew, heartbroken at 6 years old. But that was then, I know, it's so sad. You know, and I realized at that moment, I'm never going to put myself out there again. It was so embarrassing. I'll just be the funny sidekick. And so my whole career was about pushing other people's agenda, getting other people elected until I stuck my own neck out. And once I realized I had put this whole thing together when I was six, I was like, okay, well, now I get to choose how I want to show up. And how I want to show up is playful, joyful, and loving with my clients. And that's the difference in those coaches that give you 2.4 million tips to overcome imposter syndrome. No, none of that stuff works. Not in long term, because you can't manage the mind. There's only one moment you can manage your mind, when you're dead. And then it's too late. So I work with people. Yeah, I work with people to get back to that originating instant. And it's like going from black and white to color. Oh my gosh. An upset 12-year-old's been the CFO of a major company. Oh my gosh. An upset 9-year-old's been running a big trade association. How did that happen? And at first it ticks you off. And then once you start spotting it, you can choose moment to moment how you want to show up in your authenticity, having the audacity to be yourself, speaking Rocky Road when everyone else is telling you talk vanilla.
I think that's so true too. And I think then we find that we get triggers. Now, both my parents are passed away now, but I remember when I was a kid that I was called Chatty Patty by my parents. And so they called me Chatty Patty. And I can't even tell you how many times my parents said to me, Patty, we'll give you $5 if you could be quiet for 30 minutes. Like, I never once got the $5, not once. But what I learned early on was that I was supposed to be quiet and not have a voice. And one of the things when I grew up, I was like, no, I'm just supposed to kind of go with the flow and not really have my own opinion, and certainly not have my opinion or point of view be different than anybody else's. I can have it and talk to my friends and the people close to me who I already know love me, but certainly I'm not going to get out there and say anything that is different. And then I really realized that you could be an expert at what you know, but you don't become an authority until you're really willing to go out there and have a point of view and risk people not agreeing with you. And I think that was really important. And one of the things that I realized, that I remember one day driving home and I went to pick up my cell phone to call my mom. This was after she was passed away. And I thought, oh, they don't have cell phones in heaven. And I thought to myself, Mom, guess what? People are actually paying me to talk now. You wanted me to be quiet all the time and people pay me to talk now. So like, you had to do it. But every now and then I can actually hear my mother's voice, right? You know, every now and then, and I have to be like, no, Mom, that was your story. It is not going to be my story. And so I think that it's hard. And sometimes you get that trigger. I catch it so quickly now. I think in the beginning, it took a little bit more, you know, and sometimes I would be like, oh, but not anymore. Like, now it's kind of like, nope, get out of my way. Like, if you don't think I can do it, watch me. Right. And I think now what happens sometimes is when those things happen and you can really learn from them, they can actually either be your excuse, your crutch, or they can be the thing that actually spurs you on. And it's your choice, because it's like I tell everybody all the time, you weren't born a winner and you weren't born a loser. You were born a chooser. Choose wisely and you get to make the choice. And so I chose to just say, no, that's what you think, Mom. And nobody calls me Chatty Patty anymore. Now my nickname's Powerhouse Patty, and I like it a lot better.
I like that a lot better too.
So I think that is really interesting. But how many leaders, business owners, entrepreneurs, whatever word you want to insert there. But I think that a lot of times people think, I hear it all the time with my clients, right? When something successful happens and, you know, they're celebrating, they'll say to me, well, I know, Patty, but I think I just got lucky, or the timing was right. You know what I mean? Like, they can't even step into that. They feel like it must be something. And I get that too, because when I did that first event in New York, I did it super, super quiet, because I remember thinking in my mind, oh, this way, if I fail, nobody has to hear about it. And it was very, very successful. And it's really kind of funny, right? So I think that a lot of times we think that, we think, oh, we were just lucky. And speaking of people we know, Whitney McDuff, who did my speaker packet recently for me. She was going through it for me. And she said, Patty, didn't you tell me that when you do your events in New York, that you do events now and they're like 7-figure events? And I'm like, yes. She's like, how many times have you done that? I said, well, I've done the event 14 times and it's been a 7-figure event 6 times. She's like, then why are you not saying that you're a 7-figure event producer? I'm like, I don't know. That's kind of like bragging, right? You know what I mean? And she, like, literally when we went through, she went through it and was like, why are you saying this, Patty? And I realized that it's not that I wasn't stepping into it, but there's a big difference between stepping into it and like writing it and coming out and putting it in copy and whatever. And she said, why is that? Is it you or is it a true statement? And I have to tell you, every now and then I get slapped again and you think that you've handled it. You think that, oh, that doesn't happen to me anymore. You've reached a level where that's not going to happen to you. And that is not true. It doesn't matter where you are, how successful you are. You're going to step out. You're going to do something different and it's going to slap you again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so many things about what you said that I have thoughts about. First of all, I literally just did a Facebook Live on this yesterday and just wrote an email about this very, very thing of how we have a thank you, but, you know, we do something great. So I was in one of the networking groups we're both in. There was a couple of days in 1 week where like 5 or 6 people were giving me a shout out. And I'm like, yeah, but that, okay, it was no big deal. And then I realize as I'm saying those things, when we can't be with success, well, let's start with this. When we can't be with acknowledgement from somebody else, oh my gosh, thank you so much for creating this event, Patty. This was incredible. Thank you so much for putting it together. Oh, it was no big deal. It's as if that person is showing up to your house for dinner with a bottle of wine and flowers and you go, ew, and you leave them outside the door. Because if somebody's offering you that gift of acknowledgement, all we need to do is say thank you. However, what the brain goes to is, again, protection. Thanks, but it was no big deal. Thanks, but it could have gone better. Thanks, but et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's one piece. The second piece is owning our expertise. If you had 1 year where it was the 7-figure event, you are a 7-figure event producer. And so often we don't want to own our expertise. I'm an Amazon bestseller within the grief category, but it's still an Amazon bestseller, right? And owning our expertise is also being willing to have other people disagree with us. As you said, in fact, Dr. Valerie Young took my quiz, watched my webinar, and then had a call with me and requested that I change some things in the webinar. And I declined because she said in my webinar that I do for people, I talk about those 2.4 million hits and how Dr. Young says the best way to not be an imposter is to stop thinking like one. And I said, seriously, it's never going to go away, just like you said. And I said, I don't know what her long-term impact is. I just know when the work that I do with my clients is one and done. 3 sessions, we are done. It is sticky. They never forget it. And yes, imposter syndrome will continue to rear its ugly head. And I loved what you said. I don't remember the whole thing, but you were born a chooser, not a winner, not a loser, but a chooser. And our ability to flex that muscle, to practice choosing, being an expert, choosing our power, powerhouse Patty, is a moment by moment phenomenon. What's key to that is something that you talked about, which is what are the triggers? And so once we are able to unlock that originating incident, and you even named yours, mom and dad said, I'll give you $5 to be quiet, chatty Patty, right there, protect, don't speak. But it wasn't you, it was the brain. Kids come out of the womb chatty. They're screaming when they come out of the womb. You know, kids come out of the womb asking for help. Somebody's got to feed them, burp them, wipe their butts, for gosh sakes. Like, we're not born as a solo person, right? So when we can name that, those places, and sometimes people can't name the incident, but they notice a sensation in their body. So let's say you didn't have that memory, but you notice when you're triggered, you feel like your throat's closing, or your palms get sweaty, or you feel like a punch in the gut. Sometimes it's a body sensation. And mostly we're not present and we're not present to what's going on with our body. So those are all tells, like in poker. Oh, the brain just got triggered. Okay, cool. Look at that. I just went into Chatty Patty for a hot minute. I'm not choosing that. I'm choosing Powerhouse Patty. Oh, it happened again. Powerhouse Patty. Oh, it happened again. Most people think it is a one and done. It's not, because you're still alive and the brain's still thinking. That's why I say you can only manage your thoughts once when you're dead and it's too late.
I think that is so true too, though, because, you know, it's really funny. Most people who have heard my speaker story know that when I decided to become a speaker, I didn't want to be a speaker, and I became a speaker accidentally. And when I did, for 18 months, not just a couple weeks, 18 months, every single time I got on stage, before I got on stage, I threw up. Every time for 18 months. And then I went back to that same coach and I said, okay, so I'm doing this, but like, why am I still getting sick? Like, I'm still getting sick every single time. And she said something to me that really worked. I mean, it doesn't work for everybody. Everybody has to find their thing. But every time, like, I really credit her for this. So basically what she said to me was, Patty, here's the thing. You're getting caught in your head, because the reality is that when you get on stage, it isn't even about you. It's about them. And I have to tell you, as soon as I took that pressure off myself and stuff. And so now, even today, 11 years later, every time I get on the stage, whether it's virtual, in person, whatever the situation is, I always take that brief moment to calm myself and just say, Patty, this isn't about you. It's all about them. And let me please be able to say something that somebody needs to hear that's going to make a difference in their life. It's not about me. I'm just the conduit that goes there and stuff. And so once I did that, I realized that, oh, that was just like a big, big thing for me. And once I did, it changed everything. Because I have to tell you, people would say to me all the time when they'd hear that story, they're like, in 18 months, Patty, did you ever think about quitting? And I said, no, I never did. Like, I mean, I got sick, but never once did I think, oh, I don't think I'm going to do it. I never did. Because for me, once I made that decision that this was going to be a marketing strategy for me, this is what I was going to do, I kind of have this thing about myself where I'll just say, nope. And my husband said, oh yeah, you were like, nope, this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to say yes to every opportunity. And, you know, and then it kind of, you know, like everything else, it kind of gets more, oh, what do I want to do? How do I want to speak? What do I want to speak on? And all that kind of stuff though. But I never thought once about quitting ever. But I really still to this day am surprised that it took 18 months.
Well, you know, I would say you had something big at stake. People think you probably still get nervous when you go on stage, but then you remind yourself you're here to serve. And I have my own particular prayer every morning, which is, God, let me be an instrument of your peace. I don't know what that looks like, what that is, but that has been my prayer since I was a little girl. Show me who to talk to. Show me what to do next. Show me the way. Because as like you, I'm a conduit for people. But what you said is so important, twofold. One, if you ain't nervous, you don't have enough at stake, and you better go back and rethink your speech and what the lives you're about to transform, because your butt is not on the line if you're not nervous. If you're too calm, cool, and collected. I think, again, imposter syndrome rears its ugly head when we're stretched. That is a good thing. Embrace it. Because if you try to resist it, which is actually what caused the body to throw up, you're resisting that nervousness. And then your coach reframed it, which is the exact thing that I do with people too, which is to say, look, it doesn't matter if you're up there reading the phone book. I have a question for you. What is the experience you want people leaving the place with? Like when a director thinks about a movie, what's the feeling and the emotion, the experience you want people leaving the theater with? Oh, what you want people, you know, I was just coaching somebody, a client, a couple of weeks ago. She was doing a 4-minute talk at a big NSA event and freaking out like nobody's business. And I said, what do you want people left with? She goes, I want people to understand there's choices, because she's speaking to speakers who have had their money dry up during the pandemic. And she wanted to talk to them about diversifying their revenue strategies and 5 different revenue strategies. And she knows it like nobody's business. She goes, I want people to feel free, feel hopeful, and have new strategies. I go, great. You could be up there reading the phone book. And if that's your intention where you want people left, they'll be like, oh my God, she said Jane Doe. And I realized I have the freedom to do whatever I want. And then I gave her a couple of other coaching tips, which you probably already know, like, you know, doing your speech into the mirror until the person in the mirror is moved, touched, and inspired, and then throw it away and get on the stage and wail. But that piece about creating that intention, like you, that has been a lifetime for me. There's a great quote by Walter H. Murray, who led the first expedition up the Himalayas. And I don't know the whole thing by heart, but what he says is, until one is committed, there's hesitancy, always the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. And the one thing that people don't realize is when one commits, providence moves too and opens all kinds of doors your way that you never thought were going to be possible.
I think that is so true too. You know, I tell my clients all the time, I said, you know, the thing is you're trying to give so much information. And what I like to encourage my clients to do is like to really think of it in a different way. Let's have a shift. And the shift really is that if you lead with contribution, compensation will follow, but you lead with contribution first, right? And I just got done telling a client the other day, it's like, listen, Google is in the information business. We are in the transformation business. So don't be thinking that it's about overloading people with information. And the reason why was because she had done a talk and she couldn't figure out, she was getting hung up because nobody asked her any questions at the end during Q&A. And I said, oh, well, let's kind of talk about it. And then what I realized is that she had overloaded them with so much information in her wanting to share and provide so much value, they didn't have any questions to ask, right? Because they were already like trying to figure out how they were going to unpack what she'd already shared with them. And so, you know, that cliche, you know, less is more, right? You know, is so true, right? And so I think that really honing in on that, I think is super important. You know, I really come from a serve, not sell model. For me, it is always about being of service, right? And the reality really honestly is, if you think about it, the only difference between serving and selling is your intention. And as long as you have your intention right, then I think that it comes out in everything we say and everything we do, right? You know, I mean, I have watched how you have showed up. You know, I have known you for a little less than a year, but for a while, and stuff. And I love the way you show up. I love the way you show up with your clients when you talk about them. I love the way you serve. That's why I asked you to come and be on my podcast, because I knew you could break this down in a way that wasn't, I'm doing air quotes here, guru-ish, but really be able to give them ways that would really, really help them. And I have to tell you, I think this is phenomenal. And so for the audience, I want you to know that you came bearing a gift. It is quite a nice gift too. The link will be below in the show notes. But Jim, will you tell them about this gift that you brought? Because I think this just wraps this whole thing up in a bow for them.
Absolutely. So it's a quiz. And that way it's like 20 questions and you can kind of figure out your flavor. And so they go to jencokenquiz.com, which as you said, will be in the show notes. Once you take the quiz, you're going to get an email from me. In that email, make sure you read it, check your spam folder, because there will be a code for you to get a webinar on imposter syndrome for free with a worksheet so that you can look more deeply and better understand your particular flavor of imposter syndrome. I also take people on about a 10-minute guided meditation to see if we can get you back to that originating incident. Then there's also a link to set up a free 30-minute strategy call with me so we can go over your results, look at what you got to, and see if we can come up with some new practices for you to be able to catch that tiger by the tail.
That is awesome. Thank you so much for that gift. I love it. And I know they're going to want to connect with you, Jen. So what's the best place for them to go to be able to connect with you?
Best place is my website, jencoken.com, JenCoken.com.
Perfect. Okay, everybody, this is the Marketing, Media, and Money podcast. And as you know, this is how we wrap our show. Like, she didn't already give us such great information, but this is the part of the show where we do hashtag open mic, where I hand the microphone over to our guests and ask them, to share what would be your number one marketing, media, or money strategy?
I would recommend creating a 30-day challenge that would give people, it's an entry-level offer for people, and give them a taste or a feel of what it's like to work with you.
Ooh, that's a great strategy. I love that strategy. So thank you so much, Jen. I appreciate you so much being here. You are the expert. I suggest everybody connect with you, take advantage of this free gift that she has. And I love it. It's kind of almost like three gifts in one in reality and stuff. So make sure that you take advantage of it. Again, we will have all of the links there. And I really, really appreciate you being here with me, Jen. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And as long as we're thanking, Marketing Media and Money podcast and magazine are sponsored by Corporate Organizer, More Than a CRM, and award-winning Family Organizer Plus, One Busy Life, Two Easy Apps. Learn more at exactacorp.com. And for the audience, thank you for joining us on the Marketing Media Money podcast. And if you enjoyed today's episode, and I'm sure you did, please subscribe and review the podcast on your favorite listening platform. To everybody, thank you so much. As you know, we just recently had our 100th episode. Super excited. We're now in season 6. Love having you. Want you all to have a great week. Have a phenomenal week. And as we were talking earlier about, it's always about choice. If your day isn't phenomenal, remember you have the power to change it.
Thank you for joining us today on the Marketing, Media, and Money podcast. To shorten your learning curve even more, make sure to grab your free copy of the Marketing, Media, and Money magazine at www.marketingmediamoney.com. I promise your business will thank you.